Session number 5251.
Brigadier Anderson, tape 2. Now.
I think it was May 1930 when we arrived back in Hong Kong. And 1930 was really a year without incident. We managed to get training again. We managed to fire all our musketry courses in Kowloon Ranges, and we got into camp on the Chinese border at Sun Wai, right up as far as Shottacock. It was an invaluable experience for us, but it would be much more invaluable if we'd been there at the time of the war, because we managed to get a very good idea of what the frontier looked like and all its features, and we knew it inside out by the time we had left there. But it was no use to us, but it would have been used to people who came after us. Nothing, as I'd said, happened in that year at all. When 1931 came along, I went on leave to this country for about 4 or 5 months in the middle of the year, and returned to Hong Kong in October 1931. Well, things began to hot up in Hong Kong about September 31. The whole battalion, I think it was the 26th of September, were warned to be at 24 hours notice to come to the aid of the civil power under the assistant superintendent of police in Kowloon. Well, 6 hours after that warning came in, we had 9 platoons, each under an officer, assisting the police. Their job was to clear rioters from the streets and to protect all the various police stations. Three of the platoons were kept up all night, two of them merely to stop reassembly, and the third to go to a place called Mong Kok, where there was a coal yard, and we were in charge, our duty there was to protect the Japanese who were working in that coal yard. Well, this kind of thing went on until well into October. The platoons were on duty practically all day, dispersing rioters and assisting the police stations. But we were cut down from 9 platoons to about 2 or 3. Well, we come up to, you might say, the 10th of October. On that date, the situation was more or less static. So we were asked to, or we were ordered to, have a demonstration marched right through the streets of Hong Kong, of Kowloon. So we divided the battalion up into about 4 or 6 parts, and each part headed by a piper, and sent them through the various streets in Kowloon. And at the end of that show, we assembled in Nathan Road, which is the main road from the harbour up to Shamshibo Barracks. It was done on purpose because we stopped all the traffic for about 5 minutes in both ways.
Were there any signs of feeling against you, against the army?
No, we thought there would be, especially that last march back. After we reassembled, we marched back to Shamshibo with the piper's playing. And we went through the dangerous street in Kowloon. Well, there was a danger there because there were overhanging balconies, and we thought some of these heavy flower pots we had might be thrown on us. Well, we did throw one, but it landed, it got one officer on the shoulder, but it didn't do him an awful lot of damage. Otherwise, we got home unscathed.
What were the worst anti-Japanese manifestations you saw in that period?
Well, I didn't see many, because at that period I was still in England. It was September.
Yes.
When I arrived back in October, about mid-October, I was appointed adjutant. Then I was responsible, really, for organising the parties after that. And what happened after that, really, we were still helping the police in helping the civil power, mainly by patrolling all over the country, up in Kowloon, and there they did come across, this is second hand, they did come across some very gruesome sights of mutilated bodies of of Japanese. But I should say, that probably ended the whole thing.
Yes. What was the routine for dealing with seriously injured Japanese people?
Well, we had a doctor. We had always had a doctor with us who looked after the injured. And what you got to, then, of course, we got the civil people to remove the dead and bury them.
Yes.
Well, there was one mob, in case a little later on, near the end of October, when the Hobart, I remember we were at a race meeting. We were all called back from the race meeting in Hong Kong, and the battalion had to stand by for 24 hours for the expected further demonstrations, but they didn't actually happen. Well, that took it up to the end of October. November and December were spent in training, and again, we went out to Sunwai Camp, and just before Christmas, we marched back from there, 22 miles back to Shamshipo, and spent the Christmas period there. Well, we didn't have a very long rest, because on January 29th, incidentally, we were battalion on emergency duty at that time. That meant that if any move was required by any battalion at all, it fell on us. So we had schemes ready, called schemes A and B. Well, scheme A meant the involvement of the whole battalion, and the scheme B meant the involvement of a couple of companies. Well, on 26th January 1931, we were warned to prepare for scheme B, which was two companies to go to Shanghai. 3 days later, that was cancelled, and at midnight on the 31st, the whole battalion were warned to stand by to go to Shanghai at 3 o'clock the next afternoon. It was a difficult, it was a Sunday, I remember very well, because it was very difficult to know how we were going to get all the troops back into barracks in time to get things going, because the China commander said, don't disturb the civil population. In other words, don't broadcast here, there and everywhere. You wanted people back. Well, I took no notice of that, and I did broadcast and in the cinemas and the theatres and the hotels, and it's the only way we got them back. Actually, China commander, a wee bit annoyed with me, but the commanding officer said, told me there's nothing else I could do, so we got them back. And actually, all the troops were very thrilled at the idea of going to Shanghai, and there was no difficulty at all in getting them all back and ready.
Why were they thrilled at the idea of going to Shanghai?
Because all the Hong Kong papers the following morning were blazoned with the heading, Shanghai Old Days. And they wanted to get into action. Well, at 3 o'clock next afternoon, we were ready to go. But that morning I sent down, we were told that we were going in HMS Berwick. That morning I sent down exact numbers of officers, warrant officers and sergeants and other ranks who were going to embark. Because the Royal Navy are complete experts at improvisation. And the thought of suddenly being thrust with that number, about 700 people on much short notice, to them was nothing. In fact, it was incredibly easy. They seemed to have a scheme that worked out for it. And it worked out enormously well, because as soon as we started to embark, the Navy took over. And in a very short space of time, every single soldier and officer was in his slot in an allotted place without the slightest trouble at all. To them it was absurdly easy, but to me it was rather incredible performance. Well, the ship sailed that day at 4 p.m. I think the pipe band played on the quarter deck as we left Kowloon. As far as I remember, when we passed Formosa, it was night. The ship had been blacked out because the Chinese at Formosa were becoming rather active. Well, at 5 a.m. on the 3rd of February, it was the first we left Kowloon, on the 3rd of February, 5 a.m., we tied up at an anchor on the Yangtze River at Wusang. That morning, the Japs started to shell Wusang forts, and some of the shells passed quite close over the ship, but didn't worry anyone. And the Navy put us ashore at about 1 p.m. at I forget the name of the dock. It's on the Bund in Shanghai, and there we were met by a troop of the Shanghai Luthawks, who led us up to our barracks in the Majestic Hotel in Bubbling Well Road.
You'd made, in fact, record progress from Hong Kong. You'd made record progress from Hong Kong on the Berwick, hadn't you? It had been a
made one.
It had been a record trip from Hong
Kong.
Well,
the speed was average speed was 26 knots, and the Navy told us they had never done it quicker. And certainly, La Piano liner took 3 days or 3.5 days, and this was about 37 hours. When we got to the Majestic Hotel, we found just a complete empty shell. It was a miserable place. There wasn't a stitch of furniture in it, not a carpet or anything. So we had to start improvising too, and we got things going. But remember, we had travelled very light, and we hadn't all we needed really to get a thing going properly.
What had happened to the furniture?
Oh, it had been looted a long time ago.
Yes.
It had been lying empty for a long time. The whole place had been looted by the Chinese. There was absolutely not a stick of furniture left.
Did you see any other signs of civilian discontent or in Shanghai?
Not then. See, we'd just arrived. We hadn't really hadn't time to do that then. And after all, we were confined to Majestic Hotel. We weren't allowed out because we were on a 2 hour notice. The battalion was on 2 hours' notice, and the 1.5 companies was on 1.5 hours' notice to move, so we couldn't move out. Well, I remember the first night in the hotel. It was quite an exciting one because Shepai was ablaze, and the whole sky was lit up by the flames. And all the troops thought we'd be out in no time. Well, actually, for the next fortnight, nothing happened except we sent lorry patrols round every sector in Shanghai to visit the people occupying them and to get to know the district. I better say at this period that the perimeter was divided into four sectors: British, American, SVC, which is Shanghai Volunteer Corps, and Japanese. Now, the British American and the SVC role was entirely defensive. The Japanese were fighting a pretty strenuous war with the Chinese within their own sector. In other words, the Japs thought that the best way to be defensive was to attack, and he did so. Well, after all the reconnaissances were over, we took over what was called the Suchai Creek area from the 31st American Infantry. And by taking over that area, we taxed with the Japanese that were on our right. Well, after we got settled down, I went with the commanding officer down to see the Japanese, and we told them exactly where our dispositions were and what we were doing. And when we asked them if we could see what was happening to them, the reply was negative. He said, "It's secret, we cannot tell you." So it didn't help us very much. Well, this kind of thing went on for about another fortnight. And at the end of that fortnight, the Japanese and the Chinese suddenly evacuated all the positions in front of us and departed. And the Japanese didn't take long to follow in pursuit. and they came up right up past our posts, and they were being shot at by the Chinese. But they took no notice of us. Now, I better say here what our attitude to the Chinese and Japanese were. We were under very strict orders to remember that we had adopting an extreme neutrality policy. They told us that if either side tried to converse with us or make signs they wanted to speak to us, we were to treat them very pleasantly and do our best to see what they wanted. On the other hand, if they tried to be the least bit aggressive and tried to shoot us up, then we had to return with rifle fire. But that was an extreme case, only in the case of an extreme emergency. This went quite well for a bit until the evacuation of the Chinese. I told you before, I think, that we had a Chinese tobacco factory opposite us, and there was an old Chinaman with his pipe in his mouth. He used to sit in the balcony and give us signs and tell us what was happening. He let us know when the Japs were coming, and he got very friendly with us. But one night, by mistake, they shot us up on that particular post.
The Japanese shot you up?
The Chinese shot us up. And the next night, they went to the bottom of the post and shouted up, "Drop a rope." So they dropped a rope down and found tied to the bottom of the rope large packets of cigarettes. And on the top was written a peace offering. So that ended that incident. Well, after the Chinese had moved from there, it's still, things were pretty busy, because our job then was in aid of the civil power. And we had lorry patrols going around all Shanghai, all parts of Shanghai, getting in touch with the civil police, providing search parties at the various gates where they wanted them. And the orders then were that we could let refugees through into the settlement, provided they were unarmed. As regards the Japs, if they wanted to get through, either voluntary or involuntary, if they were armed, we had to tell them they couldn't come. And if they tried to come, we had to kick them out.
Did you get many refugees coming through?
Yes, hundreds of thousands. There were two or three gates open most of the day, and we had to man these gates with the civil police. The civil police did the searching, and we were there to stop trouble if the searchers tried to, if the people being searched tried to break away.
So what were the refugees fleeing from, principally?
They wanted to get away from Shepai, which was burning. They had lost their homes.
Yeah.
They wanted to get into a civilized place again, which was a settlement.
What provisions were made for them when they reached the settlement?
Well, that was up to the Shanghai government. We wouldn't know. Yeah. All we had to do was to pass them through, and the police then took them in hand. Now, how far we got?
All right.
That was another of our duties. We had to, assist the police in controlling the curfew for all Chinese citizens between the hours of dark and dawn. But that wasn't a difficult job, because they more or less kept indoors.
So how long were you in Shanghai for on that occasion?
I was coming to that, wait a minute. We left in May, I think. We arrived there on the 3rd of January, and we were finally relieved and sent back to Hong Kong on the sometime in May in HMS Kent. Well, we left Shanghai, but we'd only one ceremonial parade to perform. That was we had to line the streets for the funeral of a Colonel McKay, who commanded the French troops in Shanghai.
Was that just the Argyll and Sutherland Highlanders that were?
Yeah. The French troops, as far as I remember, took no part in the defence of the settlement. There were very few of them.
Was the French settlement run on a very separate basis from
the French settlement? Was really part of the international settlement and joined the British part of it. It was a lovely part, really the best residential part in Shanghai. And what do you call it? The lovely houses and the very rich people who lived there.
So then you returned to Hong Kong?
Yes, we returned to Hong Kong in May 32. We had the summer in peace because, again, we trained a lot and we went out to San Wai camp, but we were under orders to go back to Shanghai in November of that year, 6 months later. So there was not much we could do except to prepare to move again.
What was regimental life like in Hong Kong?
Very pleasant. Wonderful bathing, boat racing. Well, this was for the troops. They bathed and boat raced a lot. Training facilities were very good. Rifle ranges and all that. As regards sport, from the officer's point of view, there was polo, golf, racing. And the troops' point of view, there was racing too, and swimming, football. There was a Chinese league, a league there. And the Chinese usually beat everyone at football, but we joined the league and played with them. We'd all had a lot of very friendly matches with them. We got on very well in Hong Kong with the Chinese. They were an entirely different lot from the North because they were Cantonese, and the North were
Pekingese.
Mandarins. Yeah. In Hong Kong, there were an annual show, and it wasn't a very big party. We paraded on what they call the Happy Valley race course, and then we marched through Hong Kong, past the governor, who took the salute outside the Hong Kong Club, and that was the end of it. Nothing like what happened in Shanghai.
I see.
But during that period in Hong Kong, I was granted leave to Japan. It wasn't a very happy leave. I went to Tokyo, and when I got to Yokohama, which was the port of Tokyo, the custom people came on board. They questioned me for the best part of half an hour, went into my whole life history. Almost searched me. They took my cigarette case out of my pocket, stamped my cigarettes with a purple dye, and so I threw overboard one by one as they gave them to me. And I thought I was going to get into trouble, but I got the shore all right. But from then on, one's footsteps were dogged. Wherever you went in Japan, it didn't matter. I went to stay in Tokyo, I went to Nikko, I went to Nagasaki, Osaka, any of these places. You were dogged the whole way. And if you put a foot wrong, we'd have had you. My only pleasant and amusing incident that happened during the thing was in the Imperial Toilet at Tokyo. I had a double room and bathroom. And I was having a bath the first night before dinner when two geisha girls suddenly burst into the bathroom, not quite fully dressed, but not quite fully undressed, and started to scrub me. And I was absolutely astounded, but they said, they spoke English, they said, this is quite normal practice. And having scrubbed me, they departed. And every time you had a bath, that happened. Well, bit of tinned off. There's nothing much more happened in Hong Kong. We went out to training again, as I said, at Sunrise Camp, and had another reconnoitre of the Chinese frontier, but we knew it pretty well. And in October we came back and just started to pack up, ready to go to Shanghai again. And we left for Shanghai again in November. I think it was an HMT in Euralia, and we arrived there about the 5th of November. Now that period in Shanghai was a very pleasant one in a way. There was no emergency duties to perform. It was really a great social and sporting occasion. There, they celebrated the King's Birthday Parade in great style. Again, the whole garrison paraded on the race course at 8 a.m. And it was finished by about 10. And then, of course, the Shanghai Club, the Zero Club, the British Consulate opened up and expected practically the whole of the British people in the colony, in the settlement, to visit them and drink with them. Well, it was an awful round to have to do, but we did it.
What were the conditions of membership of the Zero Club?
You had to be served in World War I.
Were there many members in Shanghai?
Yes, quite a number. In the regiment we had myself and the colonel and